Coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas, and recorded live, Science News is on the air right now.
This is The Promise of Tomorrow, where people in industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of The Promise of Tomorrow.
And once again, it's so good to have you back as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. What an exciting program we have today. In the first half hour, we're going to get a visit from Chuck Korsted. He's the Global Quality and Reliability Vice President at Applied Materials. He's a speaker at the 4th Annual Green Technologies Conference going on in Tulsa, Oklahoma, April 19th and 20th. And he's going to give us a preview of what he's going to be talking about there. And then a little later on this first half hour, we're blessed with having a visit from the Republican Primary Election Candidates Band. They give a sensational performance a little later on this first half hour. And, of course, we're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of, visit our fountain of useless information we have here on the set. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. And the second half hour, a riveting conversation with Jim Heath, part of the team that discovered the Buckminster Fullerene that led to the Nobel Prize back in 1985. Jim will give us an intimate picture of life with Rick Smalley and the other members of the team. And a quick reminder that those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Right now, I want to introduce you to Chuck Korsted. He's the Vice President of Global Quality and Reliability at Applied Materials and a speaker at the the IEEE Green Technology Conference going on in Tulsa, Oklahoma, coming up here pretty soon that you hear us talk a lot about on this particular program. Welcome to the program, Chuck.
Thank you, Colonel.
Now, give us kind of a preview. You're a Vice President of Global Quality and Reliability at Applied Materials, and Applied Materials does a lot of things. So you're one of the featured speakers at the event, and when we go there and meet you and everything, what sort of things are we going to be expecting to hear you talk about?
Sure. Colonel, we make the equipment that makes the products that change the world. We focus on technology and really bring to market equipment that helps us create products around semiconductors, display liquid crystal, as well as solar. So at the conference, I'll be talking about our solar endeavor to really help bring commercial low-cost capability to the solar market and really help support the clean energy initiative around the world.
Now, is solar still viewed as a major force in the coming years? I mean, I've heard recently that a lot of the solar has gone overseas. There isn't much going on anymore with American solar. In fact, there was a Solaria scandal just recently about the government investing huge sums in that company and then it going under. Can you give us kind of a picture of the solar industry right now?
Great. It's from a global perspective. I'll give you some data from market research that. Mm-hmm. And we're in the photovoltaic crystalline silicon part of the solar industry. And over the last 5 years, that's grown from about 3 gigawatts of installation to 18 to 20 gigawatts. So sevenfold increase in the installation of PV solar capability worldwide. And that's tremendous growth. And here in California, where I'm based, one of our key utilities, Pacific Gas and Electric, they are committing 33% of their electricity generation will come from clean energy, and they're already at 20%. 20% of the electricity they produce for California comes from clean energy, primarily solar and wind. So it is still a huge market and will really get us away from other kinds of energy, the oil industry that we're dependent upon foreign countries to being a leader ourselves to create, produce, install, and generate clean energy based on solar. So it's a tremendous growth area, not only in the United States, i.e. what I've just explained in California, but worldwide. Yes, China produces most of the solar panels, and that's one of our primary areas where we sell our equipment, but then it's a huge export from China to the rest of the world.
Wow, that's fascinating. Of course, we've been talking about solar for a long, long time, back with the silicon wafers and that sort of thing for, 40 years or so. But there's been some a pretty dramatic growth in solar efficiency in more recent years. Can you kind of bring us up to date on the history of this?
Well, that's been key, is really around the cost per watt. And that's really, if you look back to the semiconductor industry or the liquid crystal display and how TVs have moved from tube to liquid crystal display, what Applied does is help commercialize and really make that cost effective. So that's exactly what we've done, is it's not just the efficiency, but the cost per watt. And we've seen about a 4x improvement in the cost per watt of solar, and really making it cost parity. That's the goal, is cost parity to other forms of energy, such as oil. So there's been tremendous strides in that. I don't have the specific numbers, but it's really around the cost per watt that attracts and makes it cost effective. And that's our job at Applied Materials, is help bring that, commercialize it, the cost per watt that makes solar panels or semiconductors or liquid crystal a real commercial success for our customers and for the end consumer.
So we're primarily talking about photovoltaics and not necessarily hydraulics when it comes to harvesting solar. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. The solar panels, the photovoltaic, or what we call it, the crystalline silicon panels, is the PV solar equipment that we help support.
Okay, one time, yeah, the cost of putting in the equipment, they looked at years and years and years for payback, and that was, I think, the big drawback to solar. But if you're getting a 4x the yield and you're looking to be parity with oil, that would be some really tremendous advances in solar.
And I think that's why the utility companies, and I use the California utilities, California has basically mandated that utilities get 33% of their power from renewable energy by 2020, the year 2020, and they're already at 20%. So it shows it is commercializing, it is becoming cost effective to invest in solar.
But the sun doesn't always shine. I guess it does in California, but it doesn't everywhere. And, of course, with wind, the wind doesn't always blow. So these technologies really are limited in how wide they can be used, I think, I'm asking, until the battery industry improves. Isn't that the case?
Well, if you think about peak capacity, is during the day when the light shines, that the industry is producing a lot of their manufacturing output is during the day, and that's where utilities need help, and therefore solar is available. And you'd be surprised if you think about how the sun energy is around the world. There's a very large belt of opportunity. It can still be cloudy and produce the sun energy that helps the solar panel. So, and you think about the growing areas, China, India, there's huge potential. They have a lot of sun, but it helps support that peak capacity. And that's when utility companies start investing in oil generators as backup to other generation plants. And this is where solar can really help support that peak demand capacity.
All right, well, you get solar down to where it's parity with oil, but what about the tremendous natural gas reserves that there are around the world, especially in this country, that says that they're getting to these natural gas things? They're not only, they're talking about one-fifth the cost of a BTU of energy than compared to oil. So is solar going to be able to compete in that realm, too?
That possibly could be. Again, you have to look about to what is renewable energy and clean energy. So I can't speak to the gas, but it's not necessarily renewable, and how clean it is cleaner, but nothing is as clean as taking sunlight and generating electricity from a solar panel.
Well, that's true. All the energy we get, we do get from the sun. That's been pointed out this many times on this particular program. So with photovoltaic, you're getting it directly, and there's no transfer. It just moves right on to electricity. But the American solar industry is not doing particularly good, I understand. Most of it, you say, coming from China. Is that the future?
It's hard to predict, Colonel. An area that China has targeted, you know, that they want to be a leader in that area, and how to take their resources, their labor, and focus it. They've made it very clear, and it's been tremendous growth for them in export. But it's also in Europe, so any country can let's say produce, but it's who then takes advantage of using it. I think we've got to be very sensitive, all of us, to really support renewable energy as, you know, installation. So I mentioned, I believe there's 20 gigawatts of installation on a global basis of solar capability, and that's just going to help the world create a cleaner environment.
When you say capability, you don't mean that it's in place right at the moment. You mean that's what we can look forward to achieving?
As far as the installation of gigawatt, that's in the last year over, I think, 20 gigawatts of solar panel capacity was installed on a global basis. If I go back 4 years before, it was around 3 gigawatts. So it's cumulative. As we say, there's but that year, 2010, I believe it was around 18 gigawatts of solar capacity was installed and generating energy.
All right, well, these solar panels that are going to be put on roofs of buildings and that sort of thing, is that what we're looking for? And will that generate enough electricity to help? Or are you talking about whole solar farms near power plants taking up a lot of acreage? What do you see?
Oh, it's both. It's in Europe, there's a lot of high-density areas where you see it's really on top of buildings, because it's just a density of buildings and the scarcity of maybe land. But in the United States, the utility companies are investing in both and giving tax credits where people will put solar panels on their roof. But the utility companies like PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, are investing in solar farms where there's a large amount of area available, and they install the solar panels as what is called a solar farm.
Once these solar units, I mean, let's talk about lifespan. These things wear out, or put a solar unit on the roof of my house, or on a big industrial building somewhere. Is it looking at lasting 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, 100 years, 200 years? What sort of lifespan are we talking about with these things?
It's a great question. I think we have to look at in Europe, where really a lot of solar started over 30 years ago, and I don't know the facts, but I believe, you know, solar panel, it continues to generate. There are industry standards about how long it needs to produce a greater than 90% of that capability, and I believe it's over 15 years that it still has 90% of its capability is kind of the standard that they certify to when they look at solar panel production or producer, that the panels have to pass that test. But they will last many years.
Well, these solar panels, is there going to be built-in obsolescence? I mean, like in the United States, that's something that we really like to do. We like to make sure that something gets obsolete within a period of time so it can be replaced. China may not have that same drive. They may want to build something that will last for 100 years. How are the standards there?
They have to pass the same standards. You know, when a consumer, be it a utility company or whoever, wants to buy panels, the panels and the panel manufacturer has to have certification. So that's international certification.
Okay, so we're not talking about built-in obsolescence. It may be just natural obsolescence. You put in a panel today, but then there's some breakthrough in collection methods that comes along in a few years, and we want to replace that panel because we have something that is three times more efficient. We're looking to that?
Well, that could be. I mean, it's like, look at the auto industry. Is cars have become more reliable, but people want are attracted by new features and capability. But it, you know, the reliability of solar, it looks very good, and again, renewable. So I think it's really how companies will look at that, or utility companies. But I don't foresee problems in general with the solar panel.
I've been told by some of the power companies that they're going to put off building any new power companies or any new power plants for another 15 or more years. And they're, what they want to do is make the electrical collection just and the usage go down and the electrical collection from renewables go up. So this provides a pretty good market. Is that some of the people that you're dealing with? Is these electric companies, are they big customers of yours?
Well, we sell the equipment that makes the products that utility companies or consumers will buy. So we do not sell directly to the utility companies or the end user. We sell to the manufacturers. So we're a capital equipment company that makes that equipment that goes into the factories that then produces the solar panels.
So you're making equipment for the solar panels that are made in China, is that right?
China, United States, Europe. So we have customers on a worldwide basis.
Wow, what an operation. Oh, well, it's been really good, Chuck. You being with us today and giving us this good picture of solar and what you're going to speak about at the IEEE Green Technology Conference. It's going on in Tulsa, Oklahoma, the 19th and 20th of April. And I know you got to get out of here pretty soon, so let's kind of wind this down a little bit. Can you give us a prediction of the future? Put on the meditation cap and step into your meditation chamber and tell us what we're going to see down the road.
Well, Carl, I think the whole focus on clean energy is crucial. The governments around the world see what's happening. If you look at just in China and look at what's happening there with the air quality and the health it impacts to their citizens, that I expect, just like in California, where I mentioned earlier, 20% of the energy today in California is clean energy, that I think on a global basis we're going to see one-third of our energy being created from clean energy. Solar is going to play a big part of that. And so I think the areas to watch is not just what is happening in California, but I think that is going to go global, and that will significantly reduce our dependency on oil and produce a much cleaner environment for the citizens of the world. So I'd say 33% of energy will be clean and renewable in the coming years, and it'll come faster than forecast. And look at China and India, where just their growth in the economy and their gross domestic product, their production, they're going to need clean energy. And so it's going to be phenomenal growth. It's going to help the world as far as our environment. So it may be kind of not a clear prediction or one that's exciting, but to me it's exciting, and just clean energy, renewable energy, and seeing a high amount of our production be coming from clean energy, and you know, for our children and grandchildren's sake, that's going to be exciting to see.
That's great, Chuck. I really appreciate you being with us. This was really good. Chuck Korsted, Vice President of Global Quality and Reliability at Applied Materials, calling us from his office in Santa Clara, California. We'll look forward to seeing you at the IEEE Green Technology Conference, the 19th and 20th in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Thanks so much for being with us today, Chuck.
Thank you, Colonel. I look forward to it as well.
Now, as you know, and we've talked about this many times on this program, that we share this studio with a number of other production companies. And down the hall today is a performance of no other than the Republican primary election candidates band, and under the direction of no other than John Boehner, Eric Cantor, and Mitch McConnell. And it is really absolutely fascinating. We asked them if it would be okay if they could guest on this program. We'd like to feature them, and they said absolutely, we can sit in. And so here it is. Here is the actual performance of the Republican primary candidates, election candidates band. Here we go. Okay, here, leading off in the parade are the front runners. Step in step, Mitt Romney and Newt Gingrich. Oh, look at them, how splendid. And look, the parade of Republicans just continues with the Republican primary candidates election band. And here, there, look, there's Ron Paul. I'd recognize him anywhere. And there coming up behind him is it's Rick Santorum. Oh yes, it's absolutely wonderful. Look at these candidates. Mitch McConnell. Oh, look, Mitch McConnell is going to—he's going to sing. Listen to him.
Wouldn't be looking good, big and beside the half one mark in the line. For you'll be black and so. My neighbor and play good and sin. He looks blitz and sharing fine and spots and big bites on their own. Beyond the Dutch and meet the Yankee on the spieling.
It's to the finish line now. Out, they're going out with, of course, yes. There goes Herman Cain. Oh yes, and out. They're going out with Michelle Bachmann. Oh, and the big finish. The big finish is saved for last. There goes Rick Perry, the Texas governor. He's out too. You talk about a winning team. I mean, they're a shoo-in to take the next election. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. Who in the Den of Strangers will we meet today? Why, it's John Kennedy.
A tremendous change to go from being a senator to being president in the first months are very difficult. I would say that the problems are more difficult than I imagined them to be. The responsibilities placed in the United States are greater than I imagined them to be. And there are greater limitations upon our ability to bring about a favorable result than I had imagined them to be. And I think that's probably true of anyone who becomes president, because there's such a difference between those who advise or speak or legislate and between the man who must select from the various alternatives proposed and say that this shall be the policy of the United States. It's much easier to make the speeches than it is to finally make the judgments, because unfortunately your advisors are frequently divided. The president must finally choose. Well, you know, that old story about Abraham Lincoln in the cabinet. He says, all in favor say aye, and the whole cabinet voted aye, and Paul opposed no, and Lincoln voted no, and he said the vote is no. So that naturally the Constitution places the responsibility on the president. The other point is something that President Eisenhower said to me in January 19th. He said, there are no easy matters will ever come to you as president. If they're easy, they will be settled at a lower level. So the matters that finally come to you as president are always the difficult matters, the matters which carry with them large implications. So this contributes to some of the burdens of the office of the presidency, which other presidents have come and gone.